I'd like to thank the session and Troy for allowing me to come speak to you this morning. So let's open your Word of God together this morning. Let's look at 2 Kings chapter 5. 2 Kings chapter 5, and we'll be looking at the first 15 verses or so. Listen here, for this is God's Word. Naaman, the commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor. Because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of great valor, but he was a leper. Now the Syrians on one of their raids had carried off a little girl from the land of Israel, and she worked in the service of Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my Lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his Lord. Thus and so spoke the girl from the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, 10 changes of clothing. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, you know that I have sent you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man sends me word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Only consider and see how he's seeking a quarrel with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent the king to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Let the man come to me, that he may know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to the door, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." But Naaman was angry and went away, saying, "Behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Phipar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned away in a rage. But his servants came near him and said, "My father, it is a great word the prophet has spoken to you. Will you not do it? Has he actually said to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Then he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and he came and stood before him, and he said, "Behold, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel." The world is coming to us. The world is coming to us. The world is changing. Do you realize that by the year 2030 or 2040, the largest Christian nation in the world will be China? Some people say they're already there. Amazing thing what the gospel is doing. Africa is rapidly becoming the center of evangelical Christianity. I have a friend in the Methodist Church, and he's part of a Methodist renewal movement. And one of the hopes that the Methodist Church has is Africa, because there are a lot of Methodists in Africa. In fact, one of the things he's looking forward to is for the day when the Methodist bishops of Africa come to the United States and throw out the American bishops because of what they believe. And that world is coming. That's reality. The Anglican church is already seeing that reality. 1.2 scholars come every year to America to study. Where I am at Penn State, there are 9,000 international students. And some say next year we'll be up near 10. The world is coming to us. Think about when you get in your car and go around the area in which you live, and think about the international faces that you see there now, whether it be at at hotels or in convenience stores or working in businesses that you're in, whatever. They're everywhere. But also think about the people that you see every day in your life that aren't internationals. The people that need the gospel. Whether it be at work or in your neighborhood or in your place of business, or wherever you are in your school, there are people all around you that need the gospel. My job is to bring it to the internationals at Penn State. And your job is to bring it to the people that you live near. And so this morning, as we look at God's Word, the name of our message is the gospel goes international. But international also can mean the person that's strange next door. It can mean your ministry where you have in your life. So let's dig in and see what God's going to teach us this morning about your word. Let's look at the first point here, God's sovereign grace at work. Naaman was a powerful military commander. It's like a Patton to us, a MacArthur or someone like that, a Schwarzkopf. And he had led the army of Syria to many great battles and won many great battles. In fact, it says in the scriptures that the Lord had given victory to Syria through him. So he was a man that was of note. He was a man that everybody knew. He was a man that had the king's ear. And yet, just like many great men, he had a problem. He had something that a weakness that was in him, and that was his leprosy. Now, leprosy to that part of the world was a death sentence. Most lepers were shuttled off out of town into colonies or into caves or whatever. They weren't allowed to be around other people. So it says a lot for Naaman that they would keep him as commander of the army. But he was a leper. And there was no way that he had ever be cured. No way he could ever be cured. You see, God gave him success and made him leper for a reason. Because he was going to see what then was the gospel. He was going to see who the real God of the universe is, who Yahweh was. And that was going to be the story that we're going to talk about this morning. You know, I work with international students, and I have an international student named Sid. Sid's from India. And Sid, he comes to our church every week. Now, he doesn't believe in Jesus. You may say he respects Jesus, and that's about it. But often, internationals will come to me for advice. And one day, he came to me, and he was real distraught. And he said, let's go to lunch. I went to lunch with him, and we sat down. And one of the things that I've been praying for about Sid was he was going to graduate 2 weeks ago. And then he was going to leave. And he had not yet come to Jesus. And that concerned me. Because I wasn't sure what was going to happen or where he'd go after us. And so he came to me and said that he had been in a job interview. And it was this perfect interview. One of those perfect jobs that everybody would like to have. And he didn't get the job. Well, he worked back in India for Coal of India. He was the head of the Coal of India safety division. Very important job. Came to Penn State to get a master's degree. And he told me, he looked at me and said, you know, Richard, this is the first time I've ever failed. How do you handle failure? So I sat there and I couldn't believe while I was getting ready to tell him. The day before, I'd had one of those days. I don't know if this is like you. I got up in the morning, car wouldn't start, got to my first appointment, they didn't show, decided I was going to do something, couldn't find a parking space at Penn State. That's a big problem. Then decided I have 4 or 5 errands to run. Everywhere I went, the person wasn't there, didn't want to deal with me. Just all this stuff. I was as frustrated as I could be. Everywhere I went, I failed. And finally, I decided about 2 o'clock that I was going to go drown my sorrows in Greece and go to Five Guys. So I walked in the Five Guys, and behind the counter at Five Guys was a girl I knew. Her name is Andrea, and she's from Chile. Her husband's getting a master's and a PhD at Penn State. And she, her husband and my wife and I were supposed to get together. I lost her stuff. I couldn't find her number anywhere. And I walked in and I said, Andrea, what are you doing here? And she said, oh, I just got this job. And I said, great. And I said, give me your phone number. I said, we want to get with your husband. Oh, yes. And we talked and I ate my grease and I walked out. And I went, oh, that's why the day's been frustrating. God had an appointment for me. Did away with all my appointments. Got me the Five Guys. Believe it or not, God blessing Five Guys. You know, going in. And I told that story to Sid. And he looked at me and he said, can it be that simple? I said, Sid, God wanted me at a place at a time. And he got me there. A week later, he came to me, he said, and what I told him, I said, often we don't know ahead of time, like I do, we don't know after the fact, that's why God did this. Well, I guarantee you, one day, you're going to find out why you didn't get that job. A week later, he called me up, all excited. He said, Penn State called me today and offered me a job. In fact, they're going to help me get my PhD. That's 5 more years we got him. Now, he doesn't know that. When he comes to Jesus, that's the first thing I'm going to say. God had it planned for you. Just like Naaman here, guys. God had a plan for Naaman's life as he has for ours. He's behind everything. In fact, he plans everything. So you have to realize that, you know, God is working throughout our culture. He's working throughout your life. God is working with people right now where you are. Whether it be someone at work or at school or wherever you are, God is preparing a person for you to give the gospel to. You just have to walk with him and walk with eyes wide open and see what he does. He was preparing Naaman to do that exact thing. So let's go on in our story here. It says that Naaman has leprosy, and then it goes, the story changes to this raiding party that goes off to Israel and brings back a little girl from Israel. And you know, this little girl comes back and is working with Naaman's wife. And suddenly the little girl one day says to Naaman's wife, listen, I know a place that your husband can be healed. It's in Israel. It's with the prophet. Would he be with the prophet of Israel in Samaria? Now let's look at this little girl here. She was probably about 12 years old, ripped from her family, taken to a foreign country, made a slave, with no hope of ever returning. Think with me for a moment the struggles and the barriers that she had to face to even tell Naaman there was a place that he could be saved, a place that he could be healed. Let me note this. In that situation, I would have anger and I would have hate. And when I saw the master of my mistress, I would look at him and say, you got what you deserve. You ripped me from my families. You ripped me from where my country. So I'm glad you have leprosy. I hope you die with it. She had to face that, go through the hate of that. Secondly, you know, Naaman's a foreigner. Boy, he's strange. They ripped me from my family and now I'm in a foreign country? He's someone, surely God doesn't want to save foreigners. Surely God doesn't want to do that. I met a man recently who came to me and he said, I understand you work with Muslim students. I said, yes. He said, we should kill them all. And this is a guy in a PCA church. Okay? And I said, well, why? He said, well, they're going to kill us. We got to kill them first. That's the kind of attitude this girl could have. They're foreigners. They're strange. We shouldn't have nothing to do with them. Should keep the gospel away from it. And lastly, fear. What if I tell him this and it doesn't work? What if I tell him where to go and the prophet doesn't heal him? My life is ended. All those fears. And yet, there's something this girl had, and that was the belief in the living God of the universe. She believed in Yahweh. She believed in God. So she put aside whatever hindered her witness and stepped out on what? Faith. She stepped out on faith. Putting all that stuff aside. And said, listen, salvation is Israel. Healing is in Israel. That's where you need to go. She points him to the prophet of Israel and showed this powerful man the way to be healed. And guess what? We don't know her name, do we? We have no idea who this girl is. But we know this. She was available to be used by God. Her heart had faith. I would even say, in one sense, she loved her master. Because you don't show people where to go to be saved and healed unless you have a serious compassion for them. And she did. And she did. You see, we are called to be faithful witnesses. We're called to put aside our cultural baggage that hinder us from our witness. You know, I'm not from around here. I'm from Rock Hill, South Carolina. So I can put it on, too, a little bit if I want to. And so in my country, there's cultural baggage between white and black. And I have to put aside my cultural baggage to be able to witness to people, to witness to black people in my culture, to put aside. Because it's sin. And so we need to put aside our baggage as we witness to others. Have you ever looked at somebody and said to yourself, you know, I would invite them to church, but they really wouldn't fit in. I have. Have you ever? Maybe it's because of their skin. Maybe it's because of their economic situation. Whatever. But we have to learn to put that aside for the gospel. For the gospel. We're to step out on faith and leave the results up to God. In your bulletin, there's a quote from Randy Pope. And Randy Pope is the pastor of the largest Anglo-PCA church, Perimeter Church. And it's a simple quote. It says this: evangelism defined being faithful to share the gospel and leaving the results up to God. Guys, we're reformed believers. We're reformed. But we rarely act that way. We're fearful to share the gospel. And yet we know it's not about us. It's about the Lord working. All we have to do is be faithful to give the message and leave the results up to God. That's about as reform and Calvinistic as you can get. Now we got to live out our Calvinism. I do every day at Penn State. I just can't believe what God sends my way. And yet he does. Yet he does. You see, the gospel of Jesus is powerful enough to save anybody. And there's no reason why God... And you see, there's a reason why God has brought these internationals here. They don't know it, But I do. It's because of the gospel. This is where they can hear. You know, there are 2,000 Muslims at Penn State. And almost every Muslim country they represent, I could not go into and preach the gospel. But you know, there are people in your life every day that are brought into your life. It's the same thing. They're in your life for you. They're your ministry. They're who God has brought you, someone into your life that needs to know the gospel. And we have to take advantage of those things. You just wonder. You have to start looking with spiritual eyes at the people around you and see what God is bringing to you. So, but let's go on with our story here. So the little girl tells Naaman where to go. And Naaman goes to his master, the king of Syria. And the king says, hey, that sounds good to me. And I'll send a letter to the king of Israel and introducing you, and he'll take it from there. So what does Naaman do? He gets together with his men. Look in verse 6. It says, verse 5. So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10,000 changes of clothes. So he goes to Israel. He gets there. He hands the letter to the king of Israel. And basically we could say he flipped out. And he said, what? You coming to me to be healed? I can't do that. And what the king of Israel is thinking is that Syria is picking a fight. So he's thinking, we're going to have war here pretty soon. So he tears his clothes and goes about doing all those things. But he tears his clothes, and Elisha hears about it, and he says, send him to me. Well, let's go back and look at what Naaman was bringing. Why do you think he was bringing all that stuff with him? Because he was going to buy it. He figured, this is not free. I'm going to have to buy my healing. So I'm going to bring gold, I'm going to bring silver, I'm going to bring changes of clothes, and I'm going to have to present this to the man of God, and then he'll do his number on you. Maybe that's how they did it in Syria. Who knows? But yet, it's pretty plain to me that he was going to buy his health back. And then we start seeing here hindrances to the gospel. First of all, Naaman starts off thinking he's going to have to buy it. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We know it's free. We know it's free. Secondly, we get to the king of Israel, a man that should welcome him and find the prophet for him. But the king is more worried about himself. The king is more worried about himself. You see, note how the king acts in unbelief versus the little girl. This is the king of Israel. And he doesn't exhibit the same amount of faith as that little unknown girl that we met earlier in the story. In fact, he exhibits fear. He doesn't say, hey, the prophet's over here. He knows where the prophet is. He said, the prophet's over there. You go over there. No, he just loses it. You see, there are always people in the lives of people coming to faith that are hindrances to that. People that will point them in the wrong direction. People that won't say anything. There'll always be people who don't understand truth. And this king of Israel didn't. So let's pick up our story. So Elijah sends word, tell the guy to come to me. And so Naaman, he gets all his group together and heads toward to where the prophet lives. It says in verse 9, so Naaman came with his horses and chariots and stood at the door of Elisha's house. You know, let's paint the picture here. You know, this foreign general, and it must have been a large group that he had with him, a caravan. coming to this prophet's house. And the general is probably, he's not dressed in his everyday clothes. He's dressed probably in all his regalia he would have as a general of an army. In all the pride, he comes there to Elisha's house. And he walks up to the door, and he knocks on the door. And Elisha sends the servant to him. And the servant tells him this: "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored, and you shall be clean. Have a good day." I really think it was this way. I believe the servant was sort of this mousy little guy. You know, he goes walking up to him and goes, the prophet said, go wash in the Jordan 7 times. You'll be clean. Have a good day. And Naaman sits there, stunned. And then he goes into a rage. He goes into a rage. What does he say? He says this: "Behold, I thought he would come out here and call on the name of the Lord and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. I thought he would act like the guys do in my country when they try to heal something. Why doesn't he come out and call on the name of the Lord and go wash in the Jordan?" Have you seen that thing lately? It's muddy. I've never been to Israel, but I understand that Jordan is never a very clean river. It's really muddy all the time. And he's thinking about 2 rivers he has at home. They're clean all the time. And he just goes into his rage about, you know, what is this prophet doing? What is he doing? You see, an unbeliever will always think they know the better way. It can't be that simple. Believe in Jesus. It can't be that simple. What do I have to give? How much is it going to cost me? What's this and what's that? Constantly. And then there's a better way. My Hindu friends that I have, you know, when they see Jesus, what they do, they just take him and add him to the pantheon. They have 1 million gods. It's no joke. There's always another way. It can't be that simple. Naaman's own culture gets in the way of him believing the gospel. He knows better than the prophet of God that was going to heal him of his leprosy. I have a friend, Dr. Richard Pratt. He has a ministry called Third Millennium Ministries. And he was in India a few years ago. He was telling me this story. What they do theological education for the world for free. And they were in a place in India, and an Indian pastor was talking with him. And they were walking outside, and they see this little girl that's a part of the congregation, and she has 2 club feet. She can't walk. And Richard had been in third world countries a lot, so he knew what she had. And she turned to the pastor and said, "Listen, there's a hospital I know that's not 20 miles from here. You can take this girl down there, and they can fix her feet." And this is a Christian pastor. He goes, "I'm sorry, we can't do that." I said, "Karma's bad with this girl. She has to stay this way." Theology matters. Belief matters. Culture matters. And here, his culture was keeping him from doing the very thing he needed to be healed. That's why we have to watch it out. Our culture. We have to watch out. But guess what happens? You know, guess what happens? You know, he's in this rage. He turns to leave. And who comes upon the scene? It says here in verse 13, "But his servants came near to him and said, 'My father, it is a great word the prophet has spoken to you. Will you not do it? Has he actually said to you, wash and be clean?'" So Some people that were with him, his servants, said, listen, this is a good deal. What's the name? Who's the name of the servants? No one knows. No names, no anything. You see, God will use you. God will use you to help others to the gospel. And sometimes you do things that the people one day will forget your name. But you will be the first one to offer the gospel. These servants were put there by God to make sure Naaman went the right direction. He went the right direction. You see, you will find hindrances to the gospel in any culture. And you need wisdom to face those. You know, one things that we find have hindrance in our culture sometimes is simply because we bought into the American dream of having everything in the world. I tell you, you want to know how much you buy into the American dream of having everything? Move. You know, we moved here to State College. August will be 2 years ago. And I thought we were pretty good. We weren't that materialistic until I started moving the stuff that we had. I finally looked at my wife. I said, we need to repent. Because everything we had, sometimes that stands in the way. Sometimes our political beliefs, now I'm not going to go down far down that trail, don't worry. All right? But sometimes we, I had to stop listening to radio, pop radio, because I was realizing it was affecting me in my view of the people I work with in the wrong way. We have to watch out for cultural hindrances that will keep people from the gospel, how they affect us, and also realize how it affects them. How it affects them. So what happens here at the end of our story? So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. What happened here? He stepped out in faith, washed in the Jordan. And his flesh was that of a little child. What does that remind you of? Being born again? What does that remind you of? A little child. We come with faith of a little child. And at that moment, Naaman, the most powerful man probably in Syria, of the army, he believes in Yahweh. He believes in the God of the Bible, the God of the Scriptures. He goes back and says, he makes his profession of faith, guys. Now I know that there is no other God than the God that is in Israel. And it's all because of a little girl, unnamed little girl, unnamed servants, sending him in the right direction. Okay. Now how do I apply all this? First of all, God is at work. God is at work around this world. He is at work here in Mount Joy or wherever you call your place around this area. He's at work and he is giving you people in your life for the gospel. They are not there by accident. Oh, gosh. You know, as reformed people, as people that believe in the Son of God, we don't believe in accidents. You know, erase that word. Go to your dictionary. Erase that word out. No accidents. You know, we have to take advantage of what God sends us. Secondly, ask the Lord to give you the grace to work through your fears. You know, we all have fear. You know, my wife and I went to a cultural event called Nowruz, which is the Iranian New Year celebration. There were 400 Iranians there partying hardy. All right, she was afraid to go. What if I make a mistake and say something wrong? I said, well, Remember, they're in the United States. They're a lot more, you know, racist than maybe we would be. And so we went there, had a great time, but she had to work through her fear about going there. And so with us, when we give the gospel, we have to work through our fear, just like this little girl did, work through all those things, and just remember to be faithful. That's what God is calling us. He's not calling us to be world savers. He's calling us to be faithful believers and showing people the way. And showing people the way. Thirdly, you don't have to be somebody to make the difference. You don't have to be great. You know, one of the things, I was in pastoral ministry 29 years, and one of the things that would kill me, I'd have somebody in my congregation come to me and say, "Listen, Pastor Smith, I have a friend that needs to know the gospel. Can you go talk to him?" And I would invariably say, "Listen, you know the gospel. You've been in my ministry 10 years. If you don't know the gospel, I've been an abject failure. But you need to do it yourself. God's calling him in your life. You don't have to be somebody. You don't have to be an expert. You just have to be faithful to the gospel. Faithful to be used by the Lord. Fourthly, the gospel is able to break through any belief. Any belief. I wouldn't be in Penn State if I didn't believe that. And I'm watching it do it little by little by little. Breaking through to these international students. And finally, we need to learn to trust the power of the gospel. The power of the gospel, the power of God who raised Jesus from the dead, is there. It is ready. The power of the gospel is ready to be used in your life. So go use it. Don't let it sit on the shelf. You know, I walked in the house one time and walked over to some people that visited our church, and I walked over to a Bible that was sitting on the coffee table, and I sat down and I was talking to the person, and I reached up and I was going to tell them something. I reached up to the Bible to pull it off the table, and this sheet of dust fell on me, and they all looked at it and said, "Well, the wife made some comment about being a good housekeeper." But you know, guys, don't put it up on the shelf. Take it out. Take it out there. Here, yes. Out there, yes too. Okay? But think about that. One of the things I do to encourage you is this, is that we all need to be just like that little girl. We need to step out and believe and leave the results of the God. I'll leave that with you.